D-Maze Finn Gnadonic, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. Continuing the old guy still got it conversation. A lot of you want to weigh in. So before we get to Teron Davenport, let's do that. Let's start with Miles on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Miles, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, I hope you guys are doing well, and I hope you can hear me.
We can.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so, everybody's taking all the good answers, but I was really enjoying this topic, and I thought I'd have some fun with it, so I'm going to give you a couple stats here. This guy is well known that he knocked the cover off the ball one time. He sometimes would even play two positions, and this was back in the day. He took down the Beast, and he was briefly mentored by Babe Ruth. Does anybody know who I'm talking about here?
I do.
I definitely do.
20 years later, Dodgers hits a home run. Smalls on the call. Vinny the Jet Rodriguez, guys. I couldn't think of anybody else, and I started thinking, let's just have some fun and hit a movie or do something like that. So.
Well, it's not Greece, Miles, but we'll allow it. At first,
I wasn't sure if you were going
with
Vinny the Jet or Roy Hobbs.
Hey, that's Willie's movie right there.
The Sandlot is one of the greatest. It's one of the greatest of all time.
I don't want to take any more time, but I do have to say, Squints, if you really think about it, Squints with Wendy Peppercorn may have ended up being the comeback player. We find out they get married down the road and own the drugstore. So.
Thank you for the call, Miles.
I like that one.
Let's go to Jay on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Jay, thanks for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, I'm kind of surprised I haven't heard this one yet. I think by age he qualifies. But what about Pecorine during the cup race in 2018? Stood on his head.
Thanks for the call, Jay. It's an interesting one because Pecorine
He won the Vezina.
He did
that year.
His first Vezina trophy. He did have the comeback from the hip infection a few years earlier, right? That season did not end as well for Pecorine, of course, in Game 7 against the Winnipeg Jets. But Pecorine, like, I'm not sure I would put
How
him
old
in
was
that...
he, Adam? Was he 40? Or no, I'm sorry, 34? I'll double check here. I want to say.
When he won the Vezina?
Older guys. One of the older, he was, older goalies to
I
win
I believe
the
he was 35. 34, 35 when he won the Vezina trophy.
Vezina trophy, 35. Yeah. 35, that's pretty good for winning the Vezina. No question.
Let's go to Ron on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Ron, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think I've heard this yet, but and it may not qualify because he didn't win, but he was on a big stage and he damn near come close. How about Tom Watson almost winning the British Open at 60 years old?
I don't remember. What year was that?
I can't remember the year, but he went into the 18th hole with a one-stroke lead. Curtis Strange was in the clubhouse. One stroke behind, and he bogeyed the 18th hole, and then they played three extra holes. And he ended up losing, but he was either 59 and a month or two away from 60 or 60.
He was 59 years old in 2009.
Yeah, that was 2009 at the British Open. I mean, I think that's an incredible feat for an old man.
Thank you for the call, Ron. Let's go to Eric on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Eric, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys, I've got two. I know one for sure qualifies, and the other one I'm not sure if he does or not. The first one says football, John Elway, who won back-to-back Super Bowls at 37, 38 years old. The only thing, of course, he had help for Terrell Davis. He doesn't get Terrell Davis. I don't know if that happens. The other one, I'm not sure of his age, of course. I'm thinking of Dennis Eckersley, because I know he started for years for, like, the Red Sox, but then he was a reliever with the Cubs. But I believe he was on all three World Series teams with the Oakland A's. They lost, of course, to the Dodgers and the Reds. But they did beat San Francisco in the Earthquake Series. I didn't know Eckersley, what his age was, if he was still pitching with the A's at that time, but I was thinking of Dennis Eckersley.
Definitely
went through a dip where it looked like Eckersley was done, and he definitely was done as a starting pitcher, and then the A's and Tony La Russa made him into a great closer, and he had like a second career. So I think that's a unique one. And here's one tidbit on Rene. Guys, Pecorine is the 10th oldest ever to win the Vezina, and about 5 of the 10 are in the earlier, the 5 of the 9 that are older than him did it in an age where it was still the original 6, so not really in the modern era. So in recent times, the last 20 years, 30 years, Pekka Rinne is among the oldest to ever win the Vezina.
Let's run through some of these other ones. Oh, go ahead.
Here's one. And maybe this qualified, maybe it doesn't, because this person retired, then came back. Michael Phelps, he was still young, but he ended up retiring in 12, decided to come out of retirement, and won 5 more medals in the Olympics. So does that qualify? Because he was on the top of his game, I guess, when he retired.
And I don't know what you would consider old for swimming.
That's what I'm saying, yeah, because he's only 39 right now.
Right. So I'm going to say no on that one.
Okay.
But I don't know. My age is for, like, swimmers in their prime. I can't say I have a solid foundation for that. Another popular choice on our text line, Mario Lemieux, who beat cancer, came back, was just as good. I think Mario Lemieux certainly qualifies for this. Let's see. Let's run through some more of these. One texter says, Lance Berkman was traded by the Astros and considered heading down and then finished top 10 in MVP and won a World Series with the Cardinals at age 35.
Okay.
Yeah.
Periphery, I would say, but worth mentioning. I mean, we're going deep on the list here, right? We're not maybe naming the most. We're just naming other nominees.
Yes. One texter says, Andre Agassi didn't make it to 35. He was 32 when he won his last Grand Slam after his run through the qualifiers back up to the top. Old guy Cinderella story in tennis. However, 32 is not considered old any longer in tennis.
Nah, it's not.
It's amazing what these guys are doing in tennis today. But Agassi did hit a dip, right, where he looked like he was career was in jeopardy.
You have to have the dip. You have to have some sort of dip. Either it's a statistical dip, or a team cuts you or gives you away in a trade. Like, there has to be that low point in the story because you have to build yourself back up.
Did anybody say Andy Pettit?
Nobody said Andy Pettit.
Okay.
What do you think?
Retired. Came back.
Andy Pettit, remember, he was caught up in the Mitchell report.
Yes.
In the whole the comical story when they were getting after Roger Clemens, and they said, but, you know, Andy Pettit says that you took the stuff. You know, you took the bad stuff. And Roger Clemens' answer was what? Do you remember?
I don't.
I think Andy misremembers. Like, he didn't want to. He said it like 5 different times. Like, he didn't want to. He loved Andy Pettit.
Right.
Andy Pettit did not want. He's like considered one of the nicest guys in the sport. And Andy Pettit was being honest because he was on the list. And he said, look, he was honest about it. He said, I took human growth hormone or whatever. I had a hurt arm. I wasn't able to pitch. Mm-hmm. And he, like a lot of players, took this stuff to rejuvenate his career, and he admitted it. Of course, Roger Clemens did a lot of the same things and more and never would admit it. I mean, was staunchly denying everything, even though all of the evidence pointed towards him. So Andy Pettit testified that this is what he saw, and Roger Clemens says, I don't think Andy is lying. I just think he misremembers.
I'm going to use that the next time I get into an argument with my wife.
He's misremembering. Yes.
I think you're misremembering, and then I'll remember how to sleep on the couch. 615-737-1025. Teron Davenport, ESPN, NFL Nation, Titans reporter. He'll join us coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. It's cute.
Sandy.
I don't think we had on Teron Davenport to listen to Derek Mason sing, but we
he
are joined
whining like Keith Sweat.
We are joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com, by Teron Davenport, ESPN, NFL Nation Titans reporter. Teron, your thoughts on Derek singing there?
Yeah, well, you know, good thing I was on the elevator. Yeah, good thing I was on the elevator and it was kind of breaking up, so I didn't have to hear any of it.
Danny Zook.
he
was whining like Keith Sweat. That's all. That's all you need to know.
Oh. There you go, telling me no.
Teron, before we ask you about the Titans, we've been having fun today talking about our favorite old guy still got it moment in sports. Do you have one that comes to mind?
Old guy still got it in sports. You know, one of my favorite ones actually would probably be Jerry Rice with the Seattle Seahawks scoring touchdowns. He caught like a post
for a touchdown, and he strolled into the end zone. And even though, you know, I don't like Jerry, like he's not my favorite player, it's still pretty cool to see that.
Teron, you wrote a story at ESPN.com detailing Cam Ward's relationship with his father, Calvin, and how much that relationship and his relationship with his family as a whole led him to where he is today. As you were reporting this story, what was your favorite anecdote you learned about the Ward family?
That's a good question. My favorite is probably the experience they had at the Incarnate Word camp. So they went there, and, you know, there were two sessions. And Cameron Ward was a part of the second session, which started at 1 p.m. And by the time 2 o'clock rolled around, they're like, all right, shut it down. It's all over. And they did that because Cam made a throw from the opposite hash to the sideline on a comeback route. And the offensive coordinator, Coach Leftwich, he was like, yeah, I don't want anybody else to see him. And it was funny because as Mr. Ward, Calvin Ward, Cam's dad, he was telling me that he was like, you know, they came to us. Like, I asked them what the heck happened because I drove 3.5 hours to be at this camp. And they shut it down after an hour. And I said, what was going on? And he said, oh, well, you know, we don't want anybody else to see you. And Cam looked at his dad and was like, what the heck are you talking about? Nobody has even approached us, you know, because he had zero offers up to that moment.
So earlier we were talking about best case, worst case scenarios for Titans players. We're going to be doing this throughout the week. And we talked about Cam Ward today. Realistically, what do you think the best case scenario is for Cam Ward? You can look at it statistically. You can look at it as more of a feel. But when you think realistically, Teron, what the best case scenario for Cam Ward is this season with the Titans, what do you think immediately?
I think the best case scenario is he throws for 4,000. Now, this is not a prediction, so let's get this straight. The best case scenario is he throws for 4,000 yards, becomes the first Titans quarterback to do that, has a low interception number and high touchdown number, and the team wins, you know, 7 or 8 games. That's the way I look at it.
Now, TD, because Willie and I discussed this last week about Brian Callahan and the way he talks about Cam Ward. It's different from the way he spoke of Will Levis last year, even though he was optimistic. But I just think, you know, not trying to put the cart before the horse, but it seems like, you know, Brian, as well as the other coaches, especially on the offensive side of the ball, they see something in him that they haven't seen in prior quarterbacks, those that have been around here. And they are overly optimistic or cautiously optimistic about what they can do moving forward. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, I think it's more last year was a lot of optimism and this year is conviction, mm-hmm. right? And I think a good example, and I'm actually literally I was going through and editing the story because it's coming out later this week, you know, about the trash talk and what that kind of means, right? Because Brian Callahan, he says specifically that they found out they have a guy on the offensive side of the ball that will trash talk too, right, and give it back to Jeffrey Simmons. And he said that's not exactly something they've had before. So now, you know, you got a guy that will do that and fill that leadership role because we know the offense has needed a leader, right, since Derrick Henry left. And even with Henry here, it was more of just like a quiet lead by example type of ordeal. And Brian Callahan, he said that that's not the type of, not that Derrick Henry isn't the type of leader that he wants. The lead by example, that's not the type of leader that they want. So I think you look at that, you look at the headbutt that J.C. Latham, you know, saw Cam Ward give to Jeffrey Simmons. Like, these are all things that make them like, oh, man, this might be the guy. I think this is the guy, right? So to me, it comes across as more conviction. Then you even look at, you know, some of the things that he's been able to do in practice, right? Even to Simmons himself, you know, they're talking trash to him. He's walking to the huddle. He relays the play and then proceeds to deliver a strike to Chig Okonkwo, you know, for a first down during third down period, right? Right after responding to Jeffrey Simmons. Like, these are all small things, but they're piling up and they're convincing these guys that he could be the one for them.
Now, also, before I pass it over to Willie, we also did it with Jeffrey Simmons, and you mentioned he and Jeff, the worst case, best case scenario for Jeff. Can you see this happening moving forward with Jeff Simmons next year, right around this time. And I'm not saying this is a bad thing, so don't get me wrong, people, that Jeffrey will be a no-show next year, and it will be because of contract situations. And then the Titans will have to make a decision on whether to try to get something for Jeffrey now or try to re-sign him and sort of move on with them that way. So how do you think this looks come next season or next offseason right around this time?
Well, you know, honestly, that could have been something this year, but they were able to avoid that. And, I mean, I think when you look at Jeff's contract, it's still, you know, top five, I believe, among defensive tackles, right, interior guys. And, I mean, look, man, let's be honest, Milton Williams and the Patriots, like, that contract messed it up for everybody. You know, everybody had to go back and relook at their situation. So next year, we'll see. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what he does this year. Like, can he finally get to those double-digit sacks? Will he finally consistently win those rare occasions where he gets one-on-ones? Will he start splitting the double team a little bit better, you know, and flush the quarterback to whoever's coming on the outside? Those are all things that I think are going to weigh into it. If he has another one of the years that Jeff has had, like last year or the year before, then I don't really think he's going to have grounds to go back and say, hey, let's look at this.
And I brought it up because of what has happened this year, in particular him being the only guy not there at the building for that voluntary OTAs. And I brought it up because, to me, he understands that this is a contract season. And again, that it is what it is, and it's not a bad thing, but he understands this is a contract season. So for him, he's trying to do whatever he needs to do to make sure that he's a much better player this upcoming season than he was last season. And last season, he was a damn good player, but he just wasn't at the bar that he had set two seasons ago.
Right, and I think, you know, the bigger picture in that is, yeah, of course, as you said, you know, he wants to do everything he can to be a better player. And he felt that wherever he was training, you know, in Dallas and up here, was going to make him a better player. But I think with the contract situation next year, I think I wouldn't be surprised if he's there for voluntary, just because it's one of those things where it's like, you know what? I don't want to – his saying, right? Give him a reason. Like, that's the same for his foundation. I think it's going to be the opposite, where it's like, I don't want to give them a reason to try to highlight, hey, you didn't even – you're supposed to be our leader. You weren't here for voluntary OTAs. How are you our leader? Why should we pay you? So I think he's going to be there just, you know, from that perspective, from the optical perspective.
Teron, before we let you go, I don't believe we have spoken to you since Jeffrey Simmons addressed reporters for the first time at mandatory minicamp last week. What did you make of his response to – not coming to the voluntary portion of the offseason program? He mentioned it was a personal decision on multiple fronts, but in terms of how he answered the question, the tone in which he answered the question, how do you think that Simmons handled that?
Yeah, I think the tone was fine. Like, he didn't have a defensive tone. It was sincere. I would like to have gotten him to open up a little bit more to why he felt it was better to train on his own as opposed to with the team and, you know, for their different activities. But I do understand the perspective that he gave, just as far as like, hey, I recognize it to be important. I found another way to continue to make myself better. I'm 20 pounds lighter, feel more explosive, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that, you know, holds some weight. But again, from an optical perspective, he should have been there. He knew that he was, I would imagine he knew he was the only one not there, being as though he communicated with the coaches. I'm sure that and other players, I'm sure that was relayed to him. So knowing that, maybe not the first couple of days, but come at some point, just to avoid this whole thing that we have going on as far as like this being the conversation.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, joining us as he does every Monday on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Teron, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll talk next week.
All right, appreciate it. Take care.
Teron Davenport on the program. 615-737-1025. We have more of the old guys still got it. A lot of texts that we can get to. Also, in my opinion, I emphasize, in my opinion, some major breaking news in the world of sports. quote-unquote, sports. And we'll discuss that coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, the game. All right, Derek, do the honors, my friend.
We come together like...
I was hoping you would actually do the ramma lamma lamma damma damma ding.
I got something in my mouth now. Some cookies. I was eating some cookies. But that's the end. That's toward the end.
So Grease was released in theaters today?
Yes.
Okay.
47 years ago.
In 1978.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
June 16th.
I was the ripe age of four.
I would have to say it's I was age seven. That Olivia Newton-John might have had to be one of my earliest crushes. Like, I didn't really know what was going on, but I, you know, when you're seven, but you kind of...
Your heart was fluttering every time you saw her on the screen.
You seem sort of drawn to a character. Like, Olivia Newton-John, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, of course.
And then there was, of course, the ill-fated sequel, Grease 2.
Yeah, don't you ever...
We don't discuss that.
We don't discuss that.
Starring.
We do not acknowledge
yes,
that.
Yes, we do not acknowledge 2, okay?
Not even Michelle Pfeiffer?
No, it doesn't. Mm-mm, no.
In a general sense, I very much...
I mean, I like Michelle Pfeiffer,
but
yes,
not
but
Grease 2.
That wasn't her best career move right there, to be in Grease
Here's
2.
The one thing you do know about Grease 2 when you watch it, because a lot of the... stars of Grease, mm-hmm. John Travolta, Olivia Newton-John, they didn't come back for Grease 2.
No.
You always know when actors are down bad when they come back for sequels. And I'm looking at the reprising roles from Grease section on Wikipedia in Grease 2. The actress who played Frenchie was in Grease 2.
Yeah, she was in Grease 2, yeah.
So clearly she wasn't getting a lot of work between 1978 and 1982.
Well, Frenchie never graduated high school, I don't think, because Frenchie went to beauty school. Remember, Frenchie went to beauty school.
She was right. A beauty school dropout.
Then they kicked Frenchie out of beauty school. Yeah. So I don't think she graduated high school, or did she?
No
wonder she was back.
Did she come back? Like, whatever happened to Frenchie? Because that was the motif of the song, right? That was the advice that whoever that was. Was it Frankie Avalon? Is that who's singing?
Frankie, yeah.
Go back to high school. That's the message.
High school dropout.
Beauty school dropout. So we have some major breaking news in the world of sports, in quotation marks. My man, Joey Chestnut, he's returning to the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest after a one-year hiatus. He'll be back
goodness.
In the saddle.
How old is Joey Chestnut?
I don't know, but he's a 16-time world champion. The old guy still got it, as far as I'm concerned. If he comes back and wins the hot dog eating contest, he qualifies.
No, but you can't. So he retired, what, 15 years ago?
He didn't retire.
You can't retire. I guess you can retire.
I mean, I guess you can. You keep eating after you retire. You just don't do it competitively anymore. You just eat with a knife and a fork. But this was my favorite line from this story on ESPN. Chestnut, the 16-time champion, missed last year's event because of a dispute with Major League Eating over his sponsorship deal with Impossible Foods, a company that makes plant-based hot dogs.
Right, okay. So that was not retirement. That was like controversy.
Yeah,
you're banned. He was banned.
He was banned.
Basically, he didn't retire.
But Chestnut added that he continues to partner with companies in the quote-unquote plant-based space. But those relationships never conflicted with his quote, love for hot dogs.
Now, when did Joey Chestnut become a professional, if indeed we can call that a
It's profession. A
profession. Yeah.
That's his job.
Okay.
He gets paid.
So
gets
when
paid.
Did he become
Joey
a
Chestnut
professional?
Joey Chestnut is 41 years old, just so everyone knows.
He's 41 now,
yeah,
so. 41.
Old guy still got it. If he sets his own record on July 4th, old guy still
got it. No, because when, again, what is considered old in the hot dog eating world? You know, because, I mean, as long as you can eat.
Larry David participated in a hot dog eating contest on an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. He's pretty old.
Joe Chestnut was 22 years old in 2005 when he started his eating career.
Oh, okay.
I'm staking my claim right now. The old guy still got it if he breaks his personal record after a one-year hiatus.
I got to go look this up, man.
So last year he did a head-to-head hot dog eating contest with his arch nemesis Kobayashi that aired on Netflix.
How can you have an arch enemy? Chestnut ate 83 hot dogs.
He ate 83 hot dogs. 83. If Joey Chestnut eats 84 hot dogs on July 4th, old guy still got it Hall of Fame, as far as I'm
concerned. Hold on. Now, seriously.
With that big mustard belt.
Seriously, 83. How much did Joey Chestnut weigh? Like right now, do they have a weigh on Joey Chestnut?
He's
a thin guy, isn't he?
Right. I think there's this misconception that that fat guys are good at eating.
Yeah,
contests.
And it's not. That's not.
Remember
the case?
When
yeah.
Refrigerator Perry tried the hot dog
he ate
eating
like
contest?
Three hot
he
dogs.
Bailed after like three hot dogs.
So it says on Google that he's 230. Well, 229.
Okay, 229. He ate 83 hot dogs at one sitting. Like, where's this stuff going?
You don't want to know, my friend.
I get it, but man, 83 hot dogs?
And he doesn't look like he's enjoying it when he's doing it. You know, he dips the water. Uh-huh. He dips the bun in the water. He's not enjoying it.
Gosh, man.
But he will be goated in my mind when he comes back uh-huh. in a couple of weeks. But and he eats those hot dogs.
He doesn't fall into that category, Adam. He doesn't.
All right, fine.
I'm just going to say.
Are you outruling me too, Willie, on this?
Yeah, I think he's always been considered the best in the biz.
Now, if he loses this year, then comes back the next year.
That is true. If he falls short this time and comes
after
back.
After being banned
for 1 year. After being banned because he likes plant-based hot dogs. If he comes back, if he loses this year, which I doubt he will, and comes back next year and wins, then maybe we can reconsider.
But how do we know? Seriously, these are questions that I want to know. How do we know when Joy's on a decline? Like, does he go from 83 hot dogs to 82 hot dogs? You know, or 80 hot dogs?
Well, if I recall correctly.
And he still wins?
If I recall correctly, near the end of Kobayashi's time on the Nathan's hot dog eating circuit, I think he might have vomited during the hot dog eating contest.
Oh, that's when you know. That's when you know it's about that
time. And that's when you get disqualified. So maybe Joey Chestnut, you know, he loses his cookies or his hot dogs, I guess, in this case.
Yeah.
But
oh well.
Joey Chestnut is one
Ralph's.
Of my he Ralph's.
What does Joey Chestnut eat just like for a regular meal?
I've told this story on the air. I saw him eating with a knife and a fork at a restaurant in San Jose, California, and it was a jarring experience. I was like, "You look like you're enjoying your meal." I didn't know this was possible. I thought everything was shoved in your mouth over 10 minutes.
Oh man!
If you want to have some fun in your spare time, go on Google because Joey Chestnut doesn't only eat hot dogs. Like he does other he does other eating contests. Mm-hmm. Go look at some of the other world records he holds.
You know what's crazy? Do you know what else he does?
What's that?
He's a civil engineer.
Wow! I would have never judge a book by its cover. I would have never thought that of Joey Chestnut.
He contains multitudes, Joey Chestnut.
You know what? I'm a Chestnut fan now.
Yeah.
I'm a Chestnut fan.
Joey. <I'm not>. Joey.
That doesn't mean that he qualifies
now,
for what we're talking about.
July 4th is a Friday. We won't be on the air, but maybe I can convince Chase that I'll do live reaction to the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. I'm 102.5, 106.3 The Game. 615-737-1025. We will wrap up the show. Unfortunately, Jared Stillman unable to join us today. But we will.
What?
Yes, he is apparently. This is the text he sent me. He said,
he's slacking.
He goes, "I'm 50-50 for 140. I got issues with my car, and two separate repair shops are blaming each other."
He's slacking. He stiffed us last week. I think it's a CO conspiracy, D-Mace. I think he's just stiff-arming us. He's big-timing us.
I agree.
Okay.
Straight up. Well, okay, Jared. We got you.
Nick Frazier has texted me as well and says, "Tell D-Mace I'll give him a full rundown tomorrow, I assume, on Joey Chestnut. That man is one of the most impressive athletes on planet Earth."
Right, so you consider Joey Chestnut an athlete?
He has to train, doesn't he?
Do you eat hot dogs? That's all you got? I mean, you train by eating hot dogs. So.
We're stretching athletes to a thin layer now.
I mean, an athlete?
This is almost like when Fox 17 had a headline last week calling Ed a celebrity zebra. We're stretching the limits of celebrity.
Yes.
Joey Chestnut is a food leet.
A food leet?
A food athlete.
Okay, I get it.
We'll have to work on that one.
Yeah, we got
it. Yeah, I know. I tried really hard on that one. But
you tried it quick. I don't blame you.
Okay,
I don't blame you. I get it.
I get it. 615-737-1025. I, for one, am stoked for July 4th. 615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingett, 1025-1063 The Game. D. Mace, Fingan, and Donick, 1025-1063 The Game. We are hopelessly devoted to Joey Chestnut, or at least I am. And there are more important sports things we can talk about right now. But during the break, I did find a story from Business Insider written in 2023 about how Joey Chestnut trains for the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. So you tell me if he's not an athlete with what he has to do here. And Willie, I want to hear your thoughts as well. He starts preparing for the contest 6 months in advance. He begins dieting and working out after the holidays to get himself in the best shape possible before he has to start training with the hot dogs. At the end of April, more than 2 months before the competition, he starts doing a practice contest every week. Chestnut's basement is even set up with speakers and flashing lights to help mimic the Coney Island environment. Talking about a full immersive experience. It takes a week just to prepare for each practice round. He starts by doing a two-day cleanse of water and lemon juice, the same cleanse he does before the actual competition. In between practices, he's working on my jaw and throat. I have a weird routine of exercises I do that really make those little muscles in my jaw and throat much stronger.
Again, it's weird, man. That's not training, I guess.
That's training.
But how much? Okay. Because when I think of training, I think of, you know, building muscle, you know, cutting some weight, you know, stuff like that. But he's gaining weight. When you're training, are you trying to gain weight?
I don't know. A two-day cleanse of water and lemon juice sounds terrible.
It does.
You're trying to train your stomach. Like, he's trying to make sure.
Okay, so it's so you're trying to train your stomach by doing that?
Yeah, so like so whenever you are getting ready for, you know, surgery, you have to have a water fast.
Okay,
so
yeah.
He's training his stomach to be able to expand.
That's not training.
Willie, you rule on this one.
That's not training.
I've saw the 30 for 30 on Joey Chestnut, and it might have been the 30 for 30 on Chestnut and Kobayashi. I don't know if it was actually both, the sort of the rivalry or whatever. It's an hour and a half of my life I'll never get back. But I did see some of the exercises that he did. Like, I appreciate that you, just to do anything great, you have to put in the time, the reps, et cetera. I just...
Come on. Are y'all seriously doing this? Even Andrew.
No, I'm with you, D-Mace. I'm not impressed.
He said that he believes that, you know, eating hot dogs, is the sport called eating hot dogs?
It's competitive eating.
Competitive eating is more of a sport than, say, chess. For all the chess players out there, what do y'all think? I think chess is more of a sport than eating hot dogs.
Yeah.
But Andrew doesn't think it.
Andrew, by the way, our guest today in the studio.
Exactly. He's our
guest. Referring to you as Mr. Donick.
Yeah, I'm here to follow Mr. Donick. Who in the hell is Mr. Donick, for one? You mean Willie?
I didn't know Willie's dad was here.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know Willie's dad was here. You mean Willie D? But yes, Andrew says that he would, you know, that eating hot dogs is more of a sport than chess.
Well, let's get back to...
I guess from a physical training standpoint, I guess you could buy it.
That's
but like,
mental training, man.
Sport.
And then it's
just disgusting.
I got to work my forearm. I got to work my forearm to move the pieces. You know, you got to work it, man.
You're working your brain.
Yeah.
You're working your brain.
See?
Let's talk about sports that we can all agree are
yes.
sports.
Okay.
Tonight is game 5 of the NBA Finals, tied at 2 between the Pacers and Oklahoma City Thunder. A whopper also of a trade in Major League Baseball yesterday, with Rafael Devers being traded from the Boston Red Sox to the San Francisco Giants. First Mookie Betts, now Rafael Devers. Interesting time with the Boston Red Sox, Willie.
Very interesting time. And the Red Sox just completed a sweep of the Yankees. They've played really well against the Yankees of all teams. But they have been very hit or miss throughout the year. They've lost a ton of one-run games. And the Devers thing, and this is, of course, as you mentioned, the backdrop is this is on the heels a few years later after trading Mookie Betts, which is still one of the biggest mistakes they've made since probably the Babe Ruth debacle that we've, you know, the whole curse of the Bambino thing. But the, in the reaction to that almost, they locked in Rafael Devers to a 10-year deal and paid him a mountaintop of money, only to see it go south in the relationship. It was a feud, which, you know, in Boston becomes a massive thing. They told Rafi Devers, hey, we're just going to let you DH. You don't need to field. Then they had a problem at first base with some injuries, and they asked Rafi Devers, would you play first base? And he refused to do it. And so even though Devers is still only like 28 years old, and he's only in the second year of this 10-year deal, it became a thing. And the Red Sox do have a very, very promising pool of young players that they're trying to get on the field. So that was a bold move. But the reaction of the Red Sox fans yesterday was, wow. I mean, they were all over this because the Giants didn't really give up a lot. Nothing that is a certainty. Just kind of like the Red Sox didn't get a whole lot for Mookie Betts. This looks very similar. It's really just clearing salary and clearing the space for these young players to come up. So this is a really intriguing trade. And from the Giants' perspective, Rafael Devers coming into the National League, it is that is a big, big needle mover for that team in particular.
I was shocked, Willie, when I saw this, that the Giants have not had a 30 home run hitter since Barry Bonds.
Unbelievable.
When I read that yesterday, I had to make sure it wasn't a typo. 2004 was the last time the San Francisco Giants had a player hit 30 home runs. The next longest drought is shared by multiple teams, but that was 2019. So by far, the Giants at 20-plus years without a 30 home run hitter. That's just absurd.
Unbelievable. And they won three World Series during that time without ever having a 30 home run hitter. And so Devers, of course, that park that they play in is not the easiest park to hit home runs in. So that's a little bit of the story. But that team has a lot of good pieces, but what they've been missing is a hitter like Devers. So I think the Giants are a team to contend with, and that's probably not good news for the Braves, who have to dig out of a hole. And by the way, the Braves host the Mets tonight for a big series, the first time they played each other this year. But in a scenario where the Braves get hot and dig out of the hole they're in, which I think they will at some point at least make a run at it, that's one more team in the Giants that I think is a legit team that you have to get by in the National League. And we'll see where the Red Sox go after surging and beating the Yankees now that the Devers drama is over.
Derek, The Thunder are 9.5-point favorites tonight at home against The Pacers. That's a shocking number. No pun intended.
Yeah, but I think what's happening is people see, even though the series is tied up 2-2, people see that clearly Vegas does, that OKC is the better team. This past game, they shot the lowest three-pointers they've shot all season. OKC is a high-volume shooting team when it comes to three-pointers because they got a lot of good three-point shooters. And they only shot 16 compared to, I think, Indiana's. They shot almost 43-pointers. They played old-school basketball, Willie. They played it, you know, inside the three-point line. And they were capable and able to win. You know, a lot of it, I think, hinges on how well Chet Holmgren plays moving forward when he's playing well, because he's one of those unique guys. And I don't think he gets a lot of credit. I think a lot of it goes to like Wimby or some of these other guys that are 6'11", 7 foot, KD. But if you watch Chet Holmgren play, man, this dude can play at 7 foot. He can handle the ball. He can shoot from outside. He has a nice little low post game. So they played old school basketball the other day. And I just think clearly Vegas sees that Oklahoma City is the better team. And even though Indiana has found themselves, you know, winning two of them, they just think that the series, it may go seven, but ultimately OKC wins this series. So
I was really impressed on Friday night that Indiana was you know, trying to will themselves. They had the lead, right? There was, it was the opposite of what we've been seeing a lot, is Indiana chasing the game and making the great comeback. This was the opposite in that Indiana had the lead, but I thought OKC, for a team that has had a great regular season, they've got a lot of fairly young players who haven't climbed to the top of the mountain. They kept really good poise, and they won the game in the fourth quarter. They made the key plays, the key possessions late on the road. I think that was a big, big moment for that whole franchise. Like, I think looking back, if they go and win a couple of titles here, which they could, and guys like Holmgren, right? How old? Holmgren's still pretty young, right?
Yeah, he's young. He hasn't been in the league that long. Yeah, they got a young, their team is young, period. I think Siakam may be the oldest starter.
I think we'll look at that moment as a moment that they really grew up. So I think I wouldn't be surprised now if they win the next two games and take this thing.
As the Associated Press notes, viewership is down about 20% from last season, and it's on pace for the poorest TV turnout since the pandemic bubble finals in 2020. Tyrese Halliburton, asked about that, says, "I do not care, to be honest with you. This is high-level basketball, and I'm excited to be a part of it." And this is what we talk about with ratings. We talked about this about a week and a half ago. We talked about the Stanley Cup Final earlier. The Stanley Cup Final has been outstanding. I cannot wait to watch Game 6 tomorrow, and I will absolutely be tuning in if there's a Game 7 later this week. The ratings for the Stanley Cup Final aren't great, but I feel like you're not hearing as much about, was there a problem with the NHL? Like, was there a problem with the NBA because of these ratings? And the NBA ratings are you know, what, three, four times higher than
the
Stanley Cup Final right now?
NBA deals with the same problem.
And noting that the finals are on ABC and the Stanley Cup Final is on network, TNT.
I just think basketball deals with the same problem in a sense that baseball does. A lot of it's regional, you know, and I guarantee you if you were just to poll the state of Oklahoma, the viewership would be extremely high, or the state of Indiana, the viewership would be extremely high. But basketball is not like football. Ain't no sports like football. Football engulfs the whole country, no matter who's playing. If, you know, in the Super Bowl and the playoffs, if it's two teams you don't like, you still gonna watch it. If they don't have, say, that marquee quarterback, you still gonna watch it more than likely. I think basketball and baseball, it's more of a regional, and maybe they suffer a little bit once it starts to narrow down to just two teams. Then you start to see, you know, where the national ratings doesn't look as good. But if you look at each individual, say if this was the Pistons and OKC, I know in the state of Michigan the ratings would be high, but would it be high anywhere else?
Yeah, it's a good question. And as I said, a lot of people suffer from "please like my sports" syndrome. Mm-hmm. Hockey fans definitely do. I think NBA fans do to a certain extent. But the finals in both sports have been good, wildly entertaining, which is what we want. Because when they're over, we're stuck with baseball. No offense, Willie, but then we're stuck with baseball until training camp starts.
Yeah, let's go. I love the dog days of summer.
Hey man, we got a text.
You sent us an article, Adam, that I think probably contributes to some of this, the fragmentation of everything. And we, you know, I directly can correlate it back to how we listen to sports talk radio today, right? It's not like it was 10, 15, 20 years ago when there were just more collective things. There were less channels, less fragmentation. You sent us an article where it kind of goes through the costs of all of these streaming platforms, et cetera, how you have to get your games. And it just seems to divide a lot of people. There's not a lot of stuff, and the NFL might be the last one where everybody's watching the same game on the same night.
And we are going
even the NBA Finals and the World Series and the Stanley Cup Finals. It's more fragmented now because more people sort of tune out when their team's out, or they're just not interested. They're not stuck watching it. Where back, you know, 40 years ago when there was no cable, you only got like six channels, so the big games were all you got.
And we're going to talk about that fragmentation tomorrow, but that'll do it for us today. We'll be back at 11. Stillman & Company, coming up next.
And for that person that said Grease 2 was just as good, if not better, Then Greece won.
What?
You know what? I hope your toe gets stepped on all day today.
I hope you step on a Lego.
I missed this. Who said that?
Exactly. David sent me a text. I'm not even going to say the person's name, okay? But listen, you have a wonderful, blessed day. Love on your people. Take care of one another. Peace.